Test 1, 2. There you go. All right.
Still getting a good signal. Anything out of that? Test 1, 2. Yep. Perfect.
Welcome. We're going to start with a Pledge of Allegiance and then get started. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you, everyone, and welcome to the 2023 convocation. I am Bridget Ziegler, the chairman of the school board. We're going to go around with quick opening remarks and introduce one another. We will conclude by 11 a.m. sharp or beforehand, and we have a lot of great stuff to go over today. Also, I want to make sure that the announcement, the opportunity for the public to speak is item number 3 on the agenda today, so please fill out a speaker card if you wish to speak and turn it in to Mrs. Tompkins back there, and we will call you up by your name. And then we'll start with introductions. So, Mr. Moran, I will start with you.
Hi, Mike Moran, Sarasota County Commission.
Robin Marinelli, good morning, Sarasota County School Board.
Good morning, Jerome Fletcher, City Manager of Northport.
Good morning, Barbara Langdon, Mayor of the amazing city of Northport.
Good morning, everyone. Jim Bolt, Vice Mayor, City of Venice.
Good morning, Tom Edwards, Sarasota County School Board.
Hi, Alice White, Vice Mayor of, yes, the great city of
Alford, Vice Mayor, City of Sarasota.
Mark Smith, Sarasota County Commissioner.
Jody Dumas, Chief Operating Officer, Sarasota County Schools.
Karen Rose, Sarasota County School Board, Vice Chair. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, Penny Gold, Commissioner with the Town of Longboat Key.
Tom Harmer, the Town of Longboat Key.
Ron Cutsinger, Sarasota County Commission.
Jonathan Lewis, Sarasota County.
Debbie McDowell, Commissioner of the amazing city of Northport.
Dick Pesciotta, Mayor of Venice.
Middle Valley, City Manager of Venice.
Joe Nunder, Sarasota County Commission.
Tim Enos, Sarasota County School Board.
Wonderful. Thank you. And I'll just remind everyone the mics are hot all day, so just keep that in mind. Moving on, we are the agenda includes a presentation on 4 items, which are update on school district enrollment and planning for the future, Hurricane Ian update, school safety, active shooter training, safe walkways to school. The agenda also includes a time for each local government to give a short update or discuss any other business. We have a full agenda, so let's get started. We are starting with open to the public. Mrs. Tompkins, do we have any cards? Where is she? Oh, you're over there. I'm sorry. Okay. Seeing no cards, we will move on to presentations. Diane Cominati to begin the update on school district enrollment and planning for the future. Didn't butcher the name.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, everyone. In 2003, an interlocal agreement for public school facility planning was adopted, recognizing the mutual obligation and responsibility of the county, cities, and school board for the education, nurture, and general well-being of the children of Sarasota County. As part of that ILA, a meeting of these legislative bodies was required to meet annually to set direction, discuss issues, and reach understandings of mutual concern regarding coordination of land use and school facility planning. The meeting was first held in 2005 and is what we have come to know as the annual convocation of governors. Aside from this meeting, the interlocal also provides for other methods of intergovernmental coordination. The School District Planning Department is a member of all local review committees providing comments on residential developments regarding potential impacts on school facilities. The planning department also reviews school concurrency applications and tracks residential development using our adopted student generation rates to assist in future school planning. A staff working group of school district, county, and city planning departments meets quarterly to discuss growth and development trends, school planning, siting, and potential joint use opportunities. Within the past few months, we were able to reestablish the Citizens Oversight Committee, which is required by the ILA. We currently have appointed representatives for the school district, Sarasota County, and the town of Longboat Key. The committee is responsible for the implementation, for monitoring the implementation of the ILA. Before we move on to capacity and planning for the future, we'll quickly look at enrollment numbers for the 2022-23 school year. Our total enrollment as of the 40-day count, which is our benchmark number for the year, we were at 46,250 students, just up over 1,000 students from the previous year. I will now hand it over to Amy Anderson, who is our planning analyst, to discuss capacity and future schools.
Thank you, Diane. Today we will be reviewing residential development and school sites within four main planning areas. We're going to start with North County area. We're looking at developments that are east of I-75, south of University Parkway, and north of Fruitville. Within this area, there are six major developments that we are focusing on. They may add an approximate 17,000 residential dwelling units, which is a projected 3,700 students just in that area that we talked about. This map shows you that to assist in addressing some of that growth, the school board owns a school site in the Lakewood Ranch Corporate Park. Currently, we are in the process of purchasing a 20-acre elementary school within the Waterside DRI. In our long-range plans, are the High Hat Master Development. The school board has a commitment for a K-8 site and a high school site. There are three schools that are impacted by these residential developments. For the current year, Tatum Ridge is showing just a little bit over capacity, and this will be addressed by the elementary school planned within the Waterside community. In Central County, we are focusing on five main developments. There are five developments that have approximately 17,770 residential development units that are projected to generate just over 4,000 students. Sky Ranch and Grand Park are actively building, and they have around 3,600 dwelling units remaining to be built. Sarasota's next new school will be in the Central County planning area, and it's shown here on the west side of Lorraine Road, just south of Clark Road or State Road 72. It is a 65-acre site that's adjacent to the Sky Ranch community and will be a K-8. There are four schools that are impacted by these developments. Currently, we are showing a need for some additional elementary capacity in this area. In South County, we are planning for significant growth. Currently, we have four main developments with over 27,000 residential dwelling units, which are projected to generate over 6,000 students. To plan for some of these developments in South County, the school district purchased a 50-acre K-8 site adjacent to an 80-acre high school site within the Welland Park community. This is going to be on future Manasota Beach Road that connects to River Road. Also, just south of Welland Park is another large development with around 10,000 dwelling units, Winchester Ranch, and we have a commitment for a K-8 site within that property. There are four schools that are impacted by these developments, and currently we're showing a need for elementary and high school capacity within this area. Within the Northport planning area, currently, there are three developments with approximately 10,000 residential dwelling units. They are projected to generate over 2,300 students. The yellow dots on this map represent 39,547 residential vacant platted lots that can build today. Those are projected to generate an additional 9,000 students if they build out. The school board currently owns 4 sites within this area. We have a 47-acre elementary school site and a 104-acre high school site within the Woodlands DRI. Near Haberlin, we have a 21-acre site for an elementary school, and we have a 51-acre middle school site in the Largo Preserve area on Citizens Parkway. There are 6 schools within the Northport planning area. For the current year, there are 2 elementary schools that are just over capacity, and that may be addressed by future elementary schools on those sites we just reviewed. Just want to say thank you guys for letting me review all of this data that we're doing and tracking and planning for our future schools. Next, I'm going to go ahead and hand it back to Diane.
Thank you, Amy. We will now take a look at our capital planning process. Our capital improvement planning includes monitoring high growth areas, reviewing Department of Education enrollment projections and available capacities at our schools, identifying projects for the next 5 years and the funding sources for those projects, and determining the timing of new school facilities. As we monitor high growth areas and their impact on enrollment and capacity, we evaluate the need for new schools. And as Amy indicated, we have acquired sites to build new schools in the next few years. Our first new school will be a K-8 in Central County, our property we purchased in 2019 along Lorraine Road, just south of State Road 72. This project is complete in schematic design and design development, and the new school is projected to open in August of 2025. We have been working with Sarasota County EOC in design for the new school to serve as an evacuation center. Oh my gosh. We then head to South County for the new high school in Welland Park along the future Manasota Beach Road extension to River Road. We closed on this property in 2021 and schematic design is complete. We are now in design development for this project. The board was presented a peek at the design concept at the December 13th work session. This new high school is also projected to open in August of 2025. Some other capacity projects coming up within our CIP is the new K-8 in Welland Park. A selection of the design committee will be coming soon. The school will be adjacent to the new high school and is funded to start in year 2023-24 of our CIP. Okay. Back up to North County, we're in the process of contracting the purchase of property in Lakewood Ranch along Lorraine Road, north of Fruitville and south of University Parkway for an elementary school. This was property that was set aside as part of the original Villages of Lakewood Ranch DRI in 2010 as a 20 buildable acre site. Funding for building the new elementary school is in year 2026-27 of our CIP. I'll now open it up to any questions you may have.
Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none. Very good.
Thank you.
Is that the conclusion of your presentation?
Yeah.
And I want to say thank you to Ms. Caminati, who is really the brains behind this entire day today. So thank you for all your hard work. Moving on to the next item, I will call on Mr. Rich Collins for a Hurricane Ian update.
Good morning, Rich Collins, Emergency Services Director for Sarasota County. It's a pleasure to be here today to discuss our coordination with the school district as it relates to the stand-up operation and demobilization of the hurricane evacuation centers during Hurricane Ian. As I was preparing comments for today, I was thinking yesterday, and it happened on my social media feed to see that 5 years ago yesterday, we were here discussing Hurricane Irma and hurricane evacuation shelters. During that intervening time, our team has done a tremendous amount of work working with the school district in how we operate what used to be called shelters, now hurricane evacuation centers. And so today I'd like to talk a little bit about how we implemented those plans and our operations during Hurricane Irma. We'll see if I can make this work. Sorry. I'd like to start with a little bit of the high-level planning that occurs. Obviously, everybody remembers Tropical Depression 9 on the 23rd of September. Back around that Thursday and Friday at 120 plus hours out, our team begins the planning process and begins to operationalize our strategic decisions related to opening of shelters depending on impacts from a storm. Throughout that weekend, we were working very closely with Jody's team as we talked about when and how we would open up shelters as the path continued to evolve for Hurricane Ian. We took protective actions throughout the weekend, developed a state of emergency that was implemented on Monday, announced evacuations based on potential impacts, prepared for Hurricane Evacuation Center operations, worked with our medically dependent operations and notifying those citizens that are part of that program, our transportation dependent program, setting up rally points, and worked very closely with the school throughout that. One of the decisions that we made was schools operated on Monday so that we could keep students in and finish that day, and then immediately upon closing schools, throughout that afternoon and evening through the night into the next morning, the school district teams along with our teams prepped and moved and put everything ready to open up shelters on that Tuesday. It was an amazing amount of work by an incredible group of people. And obviously 24 hours pre-impact, we really were expecting to be ground zero, as we saw further south from us down in Lee County area. Obviously, the governor was here. We had all the planning done to begin those actions as we expected a storm to make that impact in our area. We'll try again. Hey, I can operate. So I will talk really quickly and some of the things that we've done since Hurricane Irma. So since Hurricane Irma, we've announced and operate 12 general population evacuation centers, as well as 2 medical need evacuation centers. And this is a joint operation between the school district and the county. School district principals and staff and county staff that are assigned positions through what we call our e-roll system, emergency roles. Every county employee has one, and they move into those roles as the storm approaches, setting up the shelters, putting the evacuation centers into play, moving all the equipment, and doing everything it takes. One of the things that we did this past year and have been working on for the last several years was the inclusion of Taylor Ranch as a hurricane evacuation center. Again, a great amount of work by the school staff, support from our state through grant dollars, as well as county staff, to do the extensive work to move that up to hurricane evacuation center level. And that went into play this past spring in preparation for this past hurricane season. Some other things that we've done since Irma, we've developed caches that are located in each school. They're brought there at the beginning of season. They're stored there. So as we activate, supplies are already there to begin operations. The school district has increased their radio capacity and joined our 800 megahertz radio network. So inside all the schools, they're part of the public safety radio system. So we have direct communication with the school districts, hurricane evacuation centers when we open. And then we also continue to look, and as just mentioned, we work with the school district, the new school that's being built out by the Sky Ranch area. We're working very closely with them to maximize the most amount of space for hurricane evacuation shelters, space when needed. We've also done several other things. We are, as I know it today, the only community along the coast of the state of Florida that opens all of our shelters, hurricane evacuation centers, at the same time. Almost every other community opens them up as they begin to fill. One of the things we identified post-Hurricane Irma is that we needed to remove barriers for people to take action, for our citizens to go to a shelter. They're all open. They're in someone's neighborhood. You can go. So that places a tremendous burden upon the staff of both the school district and the county to move all that equipment and staff, which they performed excellently during this activation. We've implemented transportation dependent and rally points. Our transit team moved 80 individuals from homes and 970 citizens from rally points and bus stops across the community to hurricane evacuation centers. That worked very well for us, and we'll continue to use that. We've identified evacuation levels. We've tried to remove the barriers for people to take action. Do I need to evacuate or not? And in fact, in this storm, we actually, upon evacuation notice, moved all of those areas that were evacuation areas in red so that citizens could easily see, I'm in the red, I need to leave. We've updated our safety status, which we use, red, yellow, green maps across the county. Where is it, and what does that mean for red, green, and yellow that was out there to share with citizens as evacuation centers closed and they were able to go back home? And we work very closely, tremendous amount of work by our communications teams across the cities, the county, the school district, everybody working together, singing with one voice to get information out to our citizens to take action, worked very well for this storm. So I'll talk really quick through the timeline. As I mentioned earlier, we began our planning operations on the 23rd through the 25th. We announced the declaration state of emergency on Monday morning with evacuations for level A, adding level B on Tuesday morning. And our teams worked through the night to open up hurricane evacuation centers on 9/27, and people were arriving as early as 0900 on that day to begin moving into the shelters on the medically dependent side. Now, to operate those centers, we had over 300 county employees across all of the hurricane evacuation centers working. 4,800 evacuees moved into hurricane evacuation centers before winds prevented movement, and 357 medically dependent citizens and caregivers were in medical needs evacuation centers. And as I already mentioned, we transported over 80 from homes and 970 citizens. And one of the interesting things that we've identified and across the region we're looking at is the fact that our hurricane evacuation centers, if you remember last time I was here, we had 20,000 people during Hurricane Irma come to our shelters. This time we only had 4,800. Now, there's been a lot of work since Hurricane Irma by our communications and our emergency management staffs across the region explaining to folks that if you are in a non-evacuation area, if your home is newer built and has all of the needed construction features to be safe, you can stay at home, you can go to family and friends, you can leave the area, and that a hurricane evacuation center should be a place of last refuge to go to. And we believe that maybe our citizens heard that and took that action. And there's actually work being done by USF doing surveys to try to identify if that's true and where people went. So there's a lot of work going on in that area to look at how people react during a storm. After winds began to preclude movement on 9/28, by 9/29 early in the morning, we began to move citizens out of different shelters. We had an issue. This was a 1,000-year event, as I understand it, for flooding. During the middle of the storm, I received a call from National Weather Service about 18 to 20 inches of rain just in one area of South Venice. So obviously we had a lot of flooding conditions, and one of our concerns was Lamarck medically dependent shelter. So on 9/29, we moved those residents that were there in the medically dependent shelter up to Tatum Ridge, supported by the school district, transit, USAR teams that were in the area working and on the ground, and made that happen. And then we began to transition down. We had all the hurricane evacuation centers open. As people began to leave to go back home, those that couldn't go home came back, and we began to transition down to 5 evacuation centers, and then ultimately down to Venice High School. Since the storm was over, we didn't need hurricane evacuation center. Again, the school district worked with us to use a different school in that area. And then ultimately, we transitioned the remaining citizens to Shore Point Health in Venice, again, working with the hospital owners and the city. And ultimately worked very diligently with the school district to be able to move back and give them back to schools. I think our last citizens were out the Friday before, and we turned the schools back over on Monday so they could begin to get ready for school again, and they did a tremendous amount of work there. Now, what are the lessons learned from this? I think the big thing that we have taken away so far, I've been talking with Jody about this, and internally we've been talking about it. I can't describe the amount of work that our employees, our county employees, the women and men across the community that normally serve in roles like maybe libraries or the county attorney's office or EIT are now inside a shelter dealing with the medical emergencies that happen, the lives being damaged because their homes have been damaged, just the amount of work mentally and physically that they had to deal with, that was a huge issue for all of our employees on both the county and the school district. And then add to that that many of them that were in those shelters taking care of our citizens had homes in those same areas that were damaged and maybe could not talk to their families and yet continue to provide service to our citizens. And so I think what we've walked away with is that we need to look at that toll that it took on them and what we can do to better prepare them for that role. How can we improve training for them? How can we align our management between the county and the school district in the shelters? So those are all things we're diving into right now so that we can prepare for this coming hurricane season. And then ultimately, how do we get them out of those hurricane evacuation centers as quickly as possible after the storm so that we're not leaning on them for multiple hours while they're worried about their families and homes as well. So we are looking at contracts that we can implement. So as we, on the front end, move our employees into those hurricane evacuation centers pre-storm, because of the amount of time it takes to bring a contract online and put people in place. So as soon as the winds die down, we have those people in and ready to take over for them so that they can get to their families and do the things they need to do and get a break before we get them back to work. So we're actively working through those two things. I think those are the two biggest takeaways that we're working on, and we're continuing to dive through that with our employees as well as I know Jody's working on his side. So we'll continue to work on that and put those actions into play. The other thing we've done, we've updated and added mass care coordinator as one of our emergency management positions. That person's responsible for training and handling and working with the school district on what we do to prepare our employees for those roles, as well as monitoring during the storm. And we think that's going to be very successful. And we've moved logistics of the centers over to another position, so it kind of bifurcates and provides more direction for taking care of our employees. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions anyone may have.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Enos, and then
Mr. Collins, thank you for everything that you've done for all these years. We may have worked together a few times, maybe a lot. So what I would like to say is thank you for everything that you've done. One of the things, if you look at the terrible tragedy that happened down there in Fort Myers and all of the stuff that occurred down there, and we're here in Sarasota, knock on wood, we've been pretty lucky not to have that. One of the recommendations I'd like with Ms. Tompkins is to set up a couple-hour executive session with the county to come together to debrief about it and exactly how the partnerships we can do, look at the plans, look at everything, and see what we can do as a district to help our citizens in the county to be able to be better prepared, because, you know, heaven help that anything would happen that happened down in Lee County. I think that it would be really good to make sure, as you said, to continue the partnerships, but also to anything that can be done better, to do better, because I think that our citizens deserve that. So if we could add that in, Ms. Tompkins.
Thank you. Mr. Edwards.
Yes, thank you. I really enjoyed hearing the acknowledgement of the boots on the ground employees that transitioned into the shelters to perform soup to nuts duties and the stress and trauma that they experienced about not getting home and seeing how they fared. It's the first time I've heard it discussed in that manner publicly. If press is here, I think it's important that we, as a community of all elected officials, make sure that those people get a huge thank you, because I saw county people, I saw school people, they just continued to deliver and to provide high levels of service to the members of our community. We cannot thank them enough.
Yeah, I agree, and actually, I couldn't have said it better. I think that the element, and I know we skaved over, but especially when we're talking about the rising water and the unbelievable work and fast-paced work that was done to get the people out of the shelter at Lamarck and bring them up to Tatum is unprecedented. So, and again, I know there's been a lot of collaboration, and as a county, we're very, very fortunate. If you look at some other counties about the inner working relationships between all of the municipalities and emergency management and the school district, but a huge thank you. And to Mr. Edwards' point, you know, something that I know that the state has substantial relief funds that they have, you know, they raised a lot. I think that there's been some efforts to try to see how we can connect those funds to the first responders more quickly, because I know to this date there are many still trying to grapple with all of the insurance components and repairing their home, not to mention the traumatic component of it. So thank you for that point. Were there any? Yes, Mrs. Marinelli.
Thank you. I also wanted to just thank everybody. And some of us in this room are retired Sarasota County School Board employees, and we were assigned to shelters, so we know how important it is to provide those services to the community, but we also know the stresses that it placed on employees, both the county and the school district, so I do appreciate that that's being addressed, because it is very stressful. Because when you're trying, if you have elderly parents or children, and then you're home, it's just a lot. And then making sure you don't show that anxiety because you're committed to providing things for the community. So I appreciate that. And I do like Mr. Enos's suggestion so we can continue to improve, go over what works very well, what we need to improve together. Because it'll never be perfect because it's an emergency. But as much as we can get in place, I think that's good. So thank you.
Go ahead.
Yes, I just had a question about Lamarck, because that had to have evacuation. And has there been any discussion about maybe not using that as the special needs evacuation center because of its location?
Well, the issue during Hurricane Ian, as I mentioned, is the fact that it was basically a 1,000-year rain event, 500,000-year. I've heard multiple ways described. It is on and near a floodplain, but it, because of the level of rain specific to this event, we've used it in other events. It's not. This was, I think, an issue that is outside of the norm. There's a lot of infrastructure in that building to support medically dependent generators and other things. I think it's going to still remain on our list, but obviously we'll continue to develop additional space as we are with the school district right now and the upcoming school.
Thanks.
I just want to say thank you, first of all, to the county and County Administrator Lewis, Mr. Collins, and everyone who helped Northport as we went through, you know, some of the harder hit areas in the county of what happened during Hurricane Ian. It was a lot, and we did get a lot of support. There was a lot of communication, and we were grateful for the partnership and the lessons learned and what we had there. Our city is still, of course, dealing with a lot of what you just mentioned, ma'am, and we know we have a ways to go, but being in this county, we feel like we are well supported, and we know that we will get there with the help in this room.
Thank you. No, I agree, and I think to that point, I think I still hear even from members of staff or families that are still grappling with repairs of their home, and I think that while it's kind of, we've moved on, they have not, and so making sure we can keep that in mind, excuse me, and trying to connect them to the resources. The one question I had was, I know, and I know this is challenging when you're trying to monitor the storm and the eye of the storm. I think when you mentioned we looked at Sarasota being probably the number one where the hit was going to be, and then it ended up being a little bit more southern, if it will. Actually, I think it was Tampa that was initially. So, and combining that with how we open up all of our shelters at one time, and looking at the numbers from Irma to Ian, I personally think it was beneficial to keep them all open at one time. Is there any consideration of changing that or evaluate, because there are capacity aspects?
So we ended up being very fortunate, to your point. And I think opening them up all at the same time, while difficult for us, is about the citizen and how do we eliminate the barriers to movement. Looking at Lee County, 15 foot of water over an island, I mean, there was a lot of issues there that very easily could have been us. And I think having them all open provides a refuge, even if they didn't come maybe right when the winds came, they would find a way to get there as an eye move through or do whatever if they're in a bad spot. And I think opening them up all at the same time is still the appropriate way to go. And yes, we do buck the trend of a lot of other counties, but I would tell you we do that in a lot of ways. No other county is operating with a safety message and here's where not to go, here's what to look for when you're driving. Nobody else that I know of, when the governor was here doing a press conference with the state emergency management director, and we said we have an e-roll and we have over 300 employees going to shelters right now, they were amazed and blown away at the amount of work that's done in Sarasota County. So I'd like to try to keep them all opening at the same time because I think it's an effective way to remove the barriers.
Agreed. And one final question is, especially as we talked about, it's a 1 in 5,000 year something exponential off the charts when it came to the flooding. We had already closed many of our shelters. Is that correct?
We were beginning to close shelters, yes.
And so I don't know what the time frame is because I know there were many people in their homes at that point, and flooding is fast because it came through the Peace River. What was that time frame that we got an alert from, and is there any lessons we can learn from that?
So we were, people were leaving hurricane evacuation centers, but coming back as the floodwaters wouldn't let them go to their neighborhoods. So that was one of the issues, especially down in the Northport area. As water rises and is moving, I mean, when we talk about it being a 500-year or 1,000-year event, pretty much everything in Central Florida down the spine of the state and every river was flooded and roads were flooded. It was a disaster. And so that, as those things change, we move, and that's how we pivoted to open up places like Venice High School. Again, the school district working with us, how we moved residents, go to this location. All of those things, as we identified what the issues are, we took the actions to take care of the citizens. So on the timeline, the 29th, and I would, especially down in Northport, our partners down there would tell you it was a rapid day of water rising very rapidly as things were draining out into those floodplains.
Well, thank you. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Since this is a convocation where we talk about sharing resources, I think it's appropriate, City of Venice, to thank some of our partners that helped us with an extraordinary response effort. In the height of the storm, Hurricane Ian, we had a structure fire that started in one of our mobile home parks. It totally consumed 11 residences, and residences are pretty closely packed together. And extraordinary effort, we get support from Sarasota, from the county, from Northport, respective fire departments responded to assist us. We're normally in a lockdown situation, 100 plus mile an hour winds, very, very difficult circumstance. The mobile home park was largely unoccupied thanks to good planning on the part of their resident staff. So it was a long time before we even discovered there was a fire. By the time we arrived there, 11 units were totally consumed. And it was only through the heroism of our fire department and respective supporting agencies that contained that fire. Otherwise, the entire neighborhood would have burned to the ground. So I just wanted to publicly thank our partners, our public safety partners, the surrounding communities. You all responded, largely unsolicited. We just announced and really didn't encourage you at all. It was a very dangerous situation, but your heroism showed up and helped us to contain that fire and protect the properties for the residents of Venice. So I just wanted to publicly thank you all for your support.
Thank you very much. Unless there are any additional comments, the one final thing I wanted to say is that when we compare from Irma to Ian, the communication was incredibly improved, seamless, very easy to understand. And so it's just a great success story of looking at, post disaster, lessons learned, how we can improve, and I think we illustrated that. So thank you, Mr. Collins. Thank you, Mr. Lewis, Mr. Dumas. You guys and team did a tremendous job. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Next, I'll call on Chief Oaks for school safety.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Oaks, Chief of Police for the School Board Police Department. I will first want to thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak with you about the swatting call that happened at Riverview High School back in October. Just like the hurricane brief, I want to remind you that this is going to be just nuts and bolts. There's no real details involved in it, so just keep that in mind. So first of all, what is a swatting call? A swatting call is an act of falsely reporting a major event that results in a huge response from law enforcement, fire, EMS, and eventually SWAT teams are deployed. And in this case, the SWAT team from the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office was deployed to the location. So our situation that day was Tuesday, October 11, 2022. At 12:47 p.m., an anonymous caller reports to the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office Communication Center of an active shooter at Riverview High School, which is One Ramway here in Sarasota. This call was transmitted to all law enforcement officers and resulted in a unified response from all local, state, federal law enforcement agencies within Sarasota County and Sarasota County Fire and EMS. So pretty much everybody that heard it responded, and that included all agencies within our county, and that is not uncommon. So the timeline that I put together for you today, like I said, is brief, and I'm not going to go through it. All of you can sit here and look at it while I briefly talk, but I just want to make some points. The way I built this is the initial call was dispatched at 12:48 p.m., so just during the lunch hour for most of us. Within 20 seconds, the two SROs that are assigned to Riverview High School immediately responded and started to respond, searching the area. At that point in time, when the initial call came out, they did not know a whole lot of details. The officers communicated with the communication center, asking for additional information as they got it. Keep in mind, this is a fluid, live situation, so the communication center is receiving information and relaying it to all officers, not just ours, but everybody, as they're receiving it. 47 seconds within being dispatched, Officer Finnegan, which is one of our officers that's assigned to Riverview, she confirms with dispatch that she has not made any observations of any type of event. No gunshots, fire, heard whatsoever, no indicators of any victims anywhere as she's searching. At this point in time, again, she's responding. Both SROs are responding to common areas to see if they can identify any place that they need to be. So 57 seconds in, communications was finally able to get a specific room number from the caller. So the caller had details. As I mentioned at the beginning, this was a swatting call, but the caller had details. Specific details, descriptions of a suspect, clothing descriptions, weapon descriptions. So they were providing details that typically aren't provided when you make a false report. So at this point in time, all responders and those law enforcement in the room can confirm we all thought this was a real event because of the information that we're being fed. So at this point, the officers, the SROs, they immediately start moving towards the location of the room. They're in different locations, they're searching, they're moving together, but in different patterns to that specific area. A minute seven into it, the sheriff's office deputy, first deputy, arrives on scene. To me, that's amazing. And that's not uncommon, I'll tell you that, given the sheriff's office credit for what they do and their professionalism. That's not uncommon for anything that we deal with on our campuses. If we ask for help, they're there within, you know, like I said, a minute and 7 seconds of the call being dispatched. Next point, so Officer Finnegan, again, 2 minutes and 2 seconds in, updates that there's no indicators or signs of gunfire. And in two minutes and 15 seconds, the sheriff's office, as everybody continues to arrive, and this was a tremendous, if you didn't see it on the news, if you didn't, if you can't imagine what happened, this was a tremendous response with just law enforcement, fire, EMS, everybody in the parking lot. It's an amazing sight. The response was tremendous. So 2 minutes and 38 seconds into it, Officer Finnegan and Sheriff's Office deputies enter the room that they identify as being the location of the event. So it took them, what, a minute and 30-something seconds to get the information, 2 minutes and 38 seconds, they enter the room. They physically enter the room. They don't huddle up outside. They enter the room, the two of them. Shortly behind them, there's other officers, but those two officers, the Sheriff's Office deputy and one of our SROs, enter the room. They confirm that everybody is safe within the room. There's no signs of injuries or gunfire within the room. That information is immediately passed on. So during this time, the Sheriff's Office had intelligence or information that there was other swatting calls that occurred across the state that day. They provided that information to all the responders, but still, at this point in time, just because it's happened somewhere else, we couldn't back down and stop our response. We still have the obligation to make sure that our campuses are safe, and we had the obligation to continuously investigate this until we could determine that it wasn't an actual event. So 3 minutes in, the search continues. 4 minutes into the event, from time of dispatch, we have all common areas and hallways secured. So every hallway, all common areas on that campus were secured. We could say that there was no offender, no incidents occurring in those areas. That's when we started a detailed room-to-room search. Jumping for 4 minutes, we go into 46 minutes and 30 seconds. We confirm through communication with all staff and teachers that there's no live emergency in any one of their classrooms or rooms that they're at. Oh, sorry. Thank you, Jody. Forty-nine minutes into it, the command is turned back over to the Sarasota County or the School Board Police Department. During this event, there was a unified command set up with the Sheriff's Office. Fire EMS was there. I was there. The Colonel from the Sheriff's Office. We had administrators from the school board standing by us. We were all in communication. There was a unified command. We were all communicating, establishing that communication so we can complete what we needed to make sure that everybody on this campus was safe, and if there was an actual threat, that we stopped the threat as quickly as we could. 59 minutes in, we started bringing the buses in to make sure to release the kids for the day. This all occurred during the end of the school day, so we started coordinating with transportation. Jody and his team was working on communicating with them, making sure that we did a coordinated release of all the students from campus, whether they were drivers, walkers, or bus riders. We made sure that it was coordinated and safely done as good as we could. At 59 minutes and 14 seconds, that's when the first responders that responded to this incident started to leave the campus. So just under an hour, we were able to determine that the call itself was in fact a swatting call, was in fact there was no offender on campus, there was no injuries and no danger to our community, which is our campus, and for all other agencies, the community that our campuses fall within. So in the days and weeks to follow, we had multiple debriefs, which included from local, on campus, with the staff, teachers, with the police department, with school administration. This went on for weeks. The Sheriff's Office held debriefs within their own organization. They collectively organized one with all responders, where the line level officers, they responded, they did a debrief, we collected, we did an after actions report on all the information that we were collecting, identifying what we did well, what went well, what we need to improve on, what we can do to improve our responses and policies and everything else, procedures that we have. So in the future, if we have another event, whether live or not, we are doing the right thing. So all these debriefs occurred over the next several weeks. Eventually, at the end, the sheriff, the colonel, myself, and my command staff, my two captains, met together and we debriefed, we brought our notes together, and we made a plan of action as far as our next steps moving forward. Again, how do we improve training? How do we work together? How do we collaborate together? All of that has to come together. And in this instance, it was a great example of how we do train together and how effective that training that we are doing together and how we're working as a team works. So fortunately, this was a hoax, and we have the ability to really analyze this situation. Thank God it wasn't a real life situation, or it would be a different type of debriefs that we'd be having. But so we can take, we had a live response from everybody. It was a real time. We do reality-based training as well as we can. Reality-based training is always role-playing. This situation, we had officers that were actually responding, deputies responding, fire units, CMS units. So we could actually evaluate in real time how our responses are to situations like this. So that's the good thing that came out of this. We obviously, there's any situation, as the point was made earlier, we can always improve our processes. So we have the opportunity to identify what we need to improve and how we can improve it moving forward. And again, making sure our responses in the future are even better than what we had that day. So that's pretty much what happened that day. Like I said, I wasn't going to provide a lot of details. Is there any questions from any one of you?
Any questions, comments, thoughts?
Thank you. I'm Marlon Brown, City Manager. I just want to send my appreciation as well for, you know, what was done. You know, the City of Sarasota also assisted in that response. And, you know, it's unfortunate that right now in the country we're experiencing those types of events. We take active shooter training very, very seriously. You know, we have a performing arts hall. We have a lot of facilities. And, you know, our Chief of Police does a very good job of making sure that, you know, we go into those facilities and we train those individuals on how to respond to an active shooter situation. So, you know, I think we participated also in some training opportunities with schools, but I think it's something that, you know, we should continue to do, you know, regularly and often, so people don't get sort of like normalized with, you know, what should occur or could occur. So thank you very much.
Good day.
Absolutely. Are there any questions or comments by anyone else?
I had a question.
Go ahead.
Could you just briefly just say what, this is something that happened from the outside. Somebody made a phone call from the outside of
yes.
the school, correct? This, what is the procedure if that were to be internal? Like in that classroom, something did happen. What is, like your code red thing? Is there a way that that classroom can communicate with you or the officers on duty that there is a problem there?
Yes.
Just picking up their cell phone, is that...
Yes. The Raptor Emergency Suite is something that the school board has implemented and we use as a communication tool. So anybody, obviously, when this type of incident occurs, they're looking for movement, they're looking for sound, they're looking for victims. So the more quiet you are, the better off you are. So there's an app that you can communicate with. There also the Riverview High School has set up a communication system within their own, which we're identifying as well. But Raptor is the way that we communicate. They can activate an emergency through the app. They can communicate through the app. And then at the end of the situations, the reunification is part of that app as well. So it's important to reunify our students with their parents at the end of this as well.
You're talking about the teacher would go on there.
Yes, ma'am. Any staff member on campus has the ability to download the app and put it on their phone, whether it's a work phone or a personal phone. If they're on campus, it's geofenced, so if they're on that campus, it would notify everybody on that campus that's been identified as somebody that should be alerted of an event. And there's different types of events. It's not just an active shooter. It can be a medical need. It could be just a general law enforcement need. It could be just a support need for a behavioral issue that's occurring in a classroom. So there's different types of alerts that they can send out.
Okay, thank you.
The other piece I might add is the school district has made significant investments in systems and infrastructure to, you know, get to a lockdown as quick as possible, because I think that we all agree that that's what saves lives, locking down as quick as possible. One of the pieces we're underway on right now is we already have lockdown buttons, so strategically placed across our campus, so anybody at any time can hit those buttons. That throws our systems into lockdown, announces a lockdown, and locks all of our doors at the same time. So in addition to the app, there are those buttons. This year, our next level of that is we're putting buttons in every classroom. So not only can they call on the intercom, they can put the school in lockdown from that room.
Right.
And so our goal is get the lockdown as quick as possible from as many opportunities on campus as possible. So multiple systems doing that, all linked together, has really been the kind of the direction we've moved in. We're going to continue to do that on all of our campuses.
All right. Because I was thinking in terms of what just happened, unfortunately, in Virginia, when that was in a classroom situation, and then how, what is the system to prevent that from going outside of that classroom? And that's what you mentioned. There is a way to alert everybody else around.
Absolutely. Not only having the buttons in place in as many classrooms, all of our classrooms, and other places strategically on campus, but then empowering employees to understand that, see something, do something, put us in lockdown. Even if it's not an emergency, lock us down, because that's the safest place to be. So being able to do that as quick as possible, that's our goal. And so that we're moving very quickly in that direction.
All right. Thank you.
I have a quick question. I know this, excuse me, it gets asked a lot. What's the frequency of our drills for our students when we have lockdown drills?
So they're required by law to do them monthly, and they're the various types of drills. And they are recorded by our school safety specialist and reported to the state that we are in compliance with the law that requires that we do these drills.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
A regular question. Are there any other comments, questions? I just want to say thank you again to Chief Oaks, to Sheriff Hoffman, and to all the LEA that came in. As you mentioned, it was a sight to see, but as staff that we have to have these moments. I think it's well stated that it was as far as a real-life drill, but there were no casualties. So, and I will say after action reports that we received, and many, many people in the community, particularly our families, being concerned, as a parent, you don't want to see anything like that, but the reassurance to say that that response was unprecedented. You guys did a great job, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Anderson for Safe Walkways to School.
Good morning. I'm Spencer Anderson, Sarasota County Public Works Director and County Engineer. I'm glad to be here this morning to give you an update on the county's activities regarding our Safe Routes to School program and connections to the Legacy Trail. Just starting off, the County Commission approved an update to our Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan in August of 2021. We have over 1,700 miles of sidewalk in the county, and over 70% of our thoroughfare roadway network has sidewalks. We are working to improve that to 100% as we move on with dedicated projects to that effort. In the 2021 update to the Bike Ped Master Plan, we did a lot of outreach with the community and looking for what are their impediments to utilizing the bicycle and pedestrian network. The biggest thing on this chart, it's actually the second row in that chart, is gaps or sidewalks in poor condition. And that is really what the nut of our program is geared towards, is filling those gaps and improving the conditions of our sidewalks. And also our daily maintenance of sidewalk activities. We don't actively go out and try to find sidewalks in poor condition, but our residents are very good at submitting work requests that we do actively go out and address as soon as possible. So how we programmed our sidewalk improvement projects, the yellow lines on the map you see here are from our 2008 Sidewalk to Schools program. We recently updated that in 2021 with the red lines to identify areas and sidewalks gaps around the various schools in our district. This is down in Inglewood, around Inglewood Elementary, with the red lines and the yellow lines. They set out the areas where we look to prioritize sidewalk projects around our various schools. We have maps similar to this for every school. We have a booklet that can be provided if that's desired as a reference to look at these sidewalks we're looking to prioritize for future improvement. This is our sidewalk gaps around various schools in the map shown here. You can see the Legacy Trail is a line that is in blue. Actually, we have very good connectivity on our major roadways to the Legacy Trail. Some of the major gaps that we have are actually in our bike lanes along state roads to the Legacy Trail. And we've worked with the DOT. We've done a roadway audit with them recently and looked at areas where we can prioritize roadways along the DOT network to improve connections to the Legacy Trail. We do have gaps where there are constrained roads. Weber Street's a good example of that, where we do not have bike lanes, but we're looking in the future to see how we might be able to improve those areas to provide better connectivity to schools and the Legacy Trail, which is a main corridor for north-south connections to the majority of our community. In our capital improvement projects that we have currently slated, this is roughly 6 miles of sidewalks that we have funded for FY22, which started last year, into FY24. These primarily coordinate with the previous plan of our yellow lines. They've been prioritized. This is, like I said, 6 miles of sidewalks and one pedestrian bridge along Palmer Boulevard. There's a small connection along Palmer Boulevard that needs to go over a canal, and a pedestrian bridge has been funded to complete that work. And lastly, Surtax 4, greatly approved by the county residents in November of this year. We're very thankful for that. We have several projects around our schools and throughout the community slated for over $18 million of funding between the existing projects, the specified projects, and also a program of our Safe Frosted Schools and Legacy Trail Connections. There is a substantial amount of funding that the voters approved to target those yellow and red line projects that we plan to incorporate in the coming future. That is a 15-year plan for the Surtax 4 program, and so there will be incremental improvements as we improve those connectivity portions to our schools and the overall community. That's all I have. Any questions?
I know that we've spoken about this before as far as, as it pertains to some of the areas, we've had some tragic incidences at some of our schools, one being Pineview, and over this, understanding that there's a multifaceted team that evaluates this, I think even myself as a board member, and I believe some of my colleagues, understanding the process of how we can quickly get into action, especially as you reflect almost an action post-action report when we have something like that, and not getting caught up in the red tape when you see something that we need to repair. For example, using Pineview, was that evaluated? Can you talk through that process?
Absolutely. And at Pineview, that tragic accident that happened there, if you've been familiar with what the conditions were, there was a driver, maybe incapacitated driver, that was going westbound on Bay Street, and there was a bicyclist, a student, from south to north across Bay Street, and the driver hit the bicyclist. In that specific circumstance, there are accidents that occur. We did a post-event analysis of the infrastructure at that location specific to the RFB, the rapid reflecting beacons that are at that location that recently installed within the past couple years with the sidewalk project that was connected on the north side of Bay Street there. We didn't find that there were any significant accidents at that location from a vehicular standpoint ever. We had two minor rear-end crashes at the stop sign on Old Venice going northbound at Bay Street, but there were never any other pedestrian accidents at that location. What we have done is improve the signage and striping at that location to make them more prominent. There were suggestions that we turn that into an all-way stop. However, the best practices of the engineering profession and transportation industry is that through road of Bay Street does not require or even merit a stop sign in that location because of the volume of traffic on that road compared to Old Venice Road.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? You guys are quiet today. Get some more coffee. My final question then is, when it comes to crossing guards, again, so that is that part of your process of evaluation, or
it is not? That is either through the school board, the school board patrol, or the Sarasota County Sheriff's Department.
But they don't utilize, so this is just repairs, so you're not looking at any kind of...
Yeah, typically, when we talk about crossing guards, our chief of police has a designated person who works with the communities, the municipalities, the sheriff's office to identify locations for crossing guards, potential new locations, and they evaluate those and certainly place those where they can. And we have somebody in our chief is here. I don't remember exactly who it is in our department, but somebody works with those agencies to... Captain Ireland, right. To try and place those as many places we can across the county.
And one item of information for that, the school zones we do maintain, the signals and the signage and the striping. With respect to those, the Florida Department of Transportation came out with a new speed zoning manual a couple years ago, and we're actually required to update all of the publicly maintained school zones by July of this year. And we are nearly there. I think we have two school zones that are left to become upgraded to those standards.
Very good. Thank you so much. Yes, go ahead.
My concern is the students from Sarasota High School who dart across the street on Bella Vista to go over to the Midtown Plaza. Do you have any, you know, because I don't think FDOT will put a hawk signal there that close to a stoplight. So any solutions for discouraging them from doing that, maybe going to the crosswalk?
Yeah, that's been a real difficult area for us for the last several years to try and manage. And there is a crosswalk there, but it's right in that intersection. So, Spencer, I don't know if you guys have looked at that at all. That is that's an under state control, my DOT control. Am I correct? That area, Bella Vista, and
that is a county maintained roadway, okay, within the city of Sarasota.
Yep.
And we have partnered with the city to make improvements there in the recent years. The RFBs that were put in there, we worked with the city on that. But we have not, from my understanding, looked at a hawk signal. Like you said, that may not be appropriate due to its proximity to the traffic signal at 41.
So what would be the follow-up? Yeah, because I think this is ongoing, and I know there have been improvements, and so there's behavior and infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we do that? And I believe we've done some infrastructure. I don't know if clearly, I think perhaps there may be a need to reevaluate if there are any additional infrastructure, and then if we need to be start looking at, again, it would be infrastructure, fencing, where you're pushing people, they're less likely to climb over a fence, I suppose. Again, there's a cost, but these are the kind of things that we definitely hear from. So.
Yeah, I think maybe Spencer and I can get together and talk it through a little bit and actually meet with the city and talk with them a little bit, because we also have our relocated north-south walkway that kind of exits there too, so there's a lot going on in that intersection. So I'll take the do out there, and we'll get that coordinated and have a conversation about that area specifically.
Chair.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, just as a parent who would drop off there a lot, I think, and I've seen the city do aggressive on this recently, one of the bigger problems is people making the illegal left-hand turn out of the parking lot. And again, that kind of goes back to, it's hard to deal with illegal behavior through infrastructure and, you know, the kids most of the time go to the crosswalk.
Right.
I mean, it's very convenient to where it is at the accident. If you put it on the other side of the street, it creates another crossing problem. So, you know, a lot, in this particular case, my exposure is it's more often the driver than it is the kid. People not waiting to be patient because you got that T intersection.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to make that left-hand turn to go out towards 41. Or people making the illegal turn out of the school parking lot going eastbound on behavior business. So it's hard to deal with that behavior, but Marlon and I have spoken about it probably, you know, half a dozen times over the past 3 or 4 years, and I know we've taken a look at it, and we'll continue to look at it. So
thank you. Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We are on time. All right, moving on to each local government. So we will start with Mr. Harmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here today with Commissioner Gold to my left, and this is my last convocation meeting.
Ever, yeah.
Maybe ever. That sounds final and permanent. But I came to Sarasota County in the summer of 2012, so I really have enjoyed these meetings because there really isn't any other mechanism where all the elected officials get together and can talk about things, whether it's hurricane, school planning, and cooperation and mutual opportunities. And I remember, I think when I was the county administrator, and we were working on the Northport School Board County Partnership for the Library, and a Lompoc Key Commissioner at the time, before I went out there, was strongly supporting that partnership. And I just remember that. I thought it was very interesting that Lompoc was saying, hey, that partnership only needs to occur, and that project needs to develop. So things like that can come out of meetings like this. So thank you for the opportunity to participate. The commission did select my replacement. He will be starting a week from this Monday. My last commission meeting is this Monday, and he'll be here the following Monday. So you'll meet next year Howard Tipton. He most recently was the county administrator for St. Lucie County. His last day was last Thursday, so he's in the process of transitioning over. From an elected by standpoint, I just want to mention our elections, general elections are in March. We have 7 commissioners. We had 3 seats open. They all were uncontested, so we don't have an election in March. But I wanted to recognize Debbie Murphy. She's along the back wall there. She's one of our commissioners-elect, and I know you'll see her up here at the table next year. Obviously, Lompoc Key doesn't really drive the need for new schools in the county. I think that's kind of clear. Our population has been flat for years. You know, we've been in the 7,000 to 7,500 range. According to the state, we grew by 14 last year. And that's total, not school-age children, but total. We do hear anecdotally from the realtors that we're seeing some younger buyers. Our average age on the island historically has been in the, like, 70, 71 age. But we are, I think, over the last couple of years with the run-up in the real estate market, seeing younger buyers with more families. So I'll be curious to see what impact that might have in a small way. Over the past couple of years, we've had about 70 or so school-age students in the public schools on the entire island. And it's pretty evenly split between Manatee and Sarasota. So about half of those in Sarasota and half of those in Manatee. Our biggest private development project, because we're a built-out island and we have a lot of restrictions in place, more than the other local communities here, and that our density is kind of frozen. And so the only way you can add additional density is to go to the voters and ask to add more residential units. You can't go to the commission and ask. First, you have to go to the voters. And so our voters generally say no. And so that's historically why we've been pretty consistent with that. But our biggest private project right now, and I think everyone has been following this somewhat or aware of it, is the St. Regis. And that's a redevelopment of the Colony site, 18 acres on the Gulf of Mexico. It's a hotel, a St. Regis hotel with private residences, about 66 high-end condos, completely sold out, well under construction. Their grand opening is scheduled for June of 2024, and they've been planning maybe a national music act and other things that will occur, so I think it'll be a really big event. They're having a topping out party for their first building here next, I think the end of this month, that they're working on. And the developer has said publicly it's about an $800 million project, so it's significant. I don't think it'll go on the tax rolls at $800 million. I think it'll probably go on more in the $400 to $500 million range, but that's still a significant impact for everyone. And then we have, I just want to mention one major public project. We just finished a $30 million beach nourishment. We're wrapping up a $50 million undergrounding with our electric, but I think a really important long-term project for us is the town center. So the town commission over time assembled property. We've been working. There's a stage under construction now, 100% paid for by our residents, $850,000+, $860,000+ paid for by donors, and the laying out a new town center green for art festivals, performances, et cetera. That'll be finished in June, but we've reserved a couple of parcels around that town center green area, one for a library, and so we are excited that Sarasota County this year budgeted money to advance the planning for that library. And we've had early discussions with the school board about what a great opportunity to partner with that facility and maybe offer some lifelong learning out there for our adult education kind of programs for our students. So it's a little bit out there by a couple years, but we're starting to see it come together because the green park area and the stage will be done here this year. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Homer. And we've enjoyed your presence and all the hard work. And I will say on the library, and just for the aspect of students, when you consider the tax roll and what that part, you know, what that contributes to the district, it's something like $700,000, if I thought correct, per student. It's pretty significant. And so I do look forward to those future conversations because of the great collaboration that you guys have had with us. Thank you so much. Moving on to Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you, ma'am, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you, City Manager Harmer. We appreciate everything you've done for Northport. Your leadership and guidance has been excellent since I've been here, and you will be missed. Also, thank you to the Planning Department. I think they started off by showing that we are growing, and we appreciate the recognition of that growth. That is our mantra. We want to keep it going, and while Ian did slow us down, it will not stop us. The few items that we have on our list, I'll start with what probably is the most critical, which is we label for their skills training and current training programs at STC. We're excited about the Sarasota Memorial Hospital that's coming our way, and we know that means different things. And when you look at it from the standpoints of trades, jobs, and economic development, there's a program already underway that sort of capitalizes on that through the school systems. And we're talking about the Healthcare Academy, I think one's at Venice and one's coming, if not already, at Northport High School. These are the kind of programs that we need to build on with STC so that we can actually prepare for what we know is going to happen with the expansion of the hospitals. We're glad that Northport has reached that point of deserving that campus, and then the campus that will be at Welland Park as well. But when you hear the hospital is coming, that means things you need to get ready for. And I believe that based on what the leadership at the school board has already done in the school system, I think that we can work together to provide a great community value with our approach. And if we do that with the school, the city, and we need the state involved, this is going to be a very heavy lift. And if we can get the state involved on our side, I think that that's how we become successful. And I think that we want to make sure that you all know in the room that Northport is willing to step up and make sure that we play a very visible and helpful role in the leadership of executing this. This is not something we want to ask you for your support and assistance and just sit on the sidelines, but we think that we can be a true valued partner as we look out for the development of the city in South County. Mayor, I'm not sure if you want to add to that, but that's what the request is for the situation. It's something we talked about last year, and something we want to definitely just keep the ball going for in this year.
Thank you. Good. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to reiterate a little bit. We have a lot of kids who graduate from high school and go directly into the workforce. So we really need to have training that's not college-bound training. We really need to expand that. So I'm really looking forward to our working together to make that happen for the city of Northport. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I know that in a future workshop, we are discussing further expansion and how we can address that. So that is definitely on our radar, and it's actually coming up, I think, next month. So thank you for, and so stay tuned.
Cool, great, thank you. And that sort of piggybacks into the next one.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I have two more, I'll be quick.
No, take your time.
One is an intern program. You know, based on what, you know, the mayor just said, you know, we are looking forward to sort of beginning one with the partnership with the schools, because we do believe that, and some of you may have seen sort of nationwide where there is a desire to stop asking for a four-year degree at every single job at every single turn. And if we can get our students to understand that cities, counties, we offer just about every discipline that anyone could probably want to go into. And I don't even want to talk about the number of people who get a degree and then go into a different job because of that's where the fit is for what they want. If we can help them do what some of us didn't do, which is reduce that learning curve, I think that we will be a stronger city for it. So if we could sort of work together and partner on having an internship program with the schools, we believe that the city of Northport could provide a valuable role in that as well.
Just a quick comment on that. I thank you. That's wonderful. Dr. DePillo is in the room, and so he's guiding that effort for the school district. I'm sure he's got all ears on this. And one of the things that ties exactly to what you're talking about is, you know, making significant investments in creating a plan for every student when they graduate. Not everybody's going to college, but making sure everybody's got a plan. And so piece of that is making sure they understand if they're not going to college, what are the opportunities in the community, right? We have not done a good job in the district of saying, hey, you can come work for the school district, but also county, city, there are wonderful jobs where a student can graduate high school and work their way up in local government. And so we're happy to capitalize on that and work with you on that. And I think that aligns exactly to our strategic plan and where we're going.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Keep going. No, I got, no, you're fine.
Finally, the last one is about the, we had conversations about a traffic light being, we talked about, you know, pedestrian safety earlier, and I didn't want to sort of mix this issue with that one, but we have offered as a city our opinion that there should be a traffic light at Northport High School. It is a crazy area, so to speak, when everyone's trying to get out of there at one time. And based on the study and analysis that we've done, we believe one is warranted. Just so you know, the last place we left the conversation, I did speak to the former superintendent, and I thought he wanted to do an independent study of his own just to see what, you know, the school thought about the situation. And then some things happened in the fall, and here we are now. We just want to make sure this is on the radar, because while we believe that the school, the stoplight is warranted, it's not something we want to do without the partnership of the school. So however we can sort of get together and make sure that we are in lock and step side by side with that, we would really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll reach out to you. I have that in my inbox, and so we'll, okay, we'll reach out, come down and talk, and we'll have a conversation about that. But yeah, I got it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And next we have Mr. Marlon Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hamler, thank you very much for all of your, you know, involvement in Sarasota County and the town of Longwood and the city. With the Gulfstream Roundabout, we'll put a statue of you in the middle of that. that would be our piece of public art. But anyway, thank you very much for all of your cooperation with the city of Sarasota, Longwood Key, and when you were with Sarasota County. You know, Madam Chair, just four quick topics, and I'll, you know, make sure that we're very brief. If we can get a quick update on the Sarasota High School MERT, we've been working very closely with Jody, Mr. Dumas, and this, and if we can get a quick update, I'd really appreciate that. For those of you who may not be aware, we are also working with Sarasota High School on the construction of 4 to 6 tennis courts at Payne Park. And again, thank you very much for the school board's support on that. And, you know, we will continue to work diligently to get those tennis courts built, and really appreciate the school board allowing the public to use those when it's not being used by Sarasota High School students. So we'll get to work on that very quickly. Also, too, we've been having a struggle on our advisory boards getting students involved in those advisory boards. It's sort of a learning opportunity for them to get involved in government, to understand how government works and understand some of the issues that governments are involved with. We used to work closely with the Boys and Girls, but we are looking at opening it up for other high school students as well. So we'll continue to work with the school board in terms of what we're looking for in terms of students that may be interested in either getting some type of credit, and again, any of my commissioners, whether it's the vice mayor or Commissioner Aaron Koch, could add to that if they are so inclined. And I also want to apologize that the mayor is not here. He's not feeling well this morning. So again, he sends his apologies and wishes that he could be here. So one of the major efforts that we're undertaking right now, obviously, is affordable housing. We had our first town hall in terms of affordable housing. And again, you know, focusing on those individuals who are teachers, you know, police officers, first responders, trying to get really good housing for them. We all know what the housing market is here in Sarasota County. And, you know, we're going to do every effort that we can and do our part in trying to, you know, really, you know, get that, you know, amount of affordable housing, you know, much more available for those who need it. And so we'll continue to do our part. You know, if the other entities could do their part as well, I think we can really put a dent into how much affordable housing there is countywide for those who most are in need of it. And again, you know, the Vice Mayor can pitch in a little bit on our affordable housing effort. Vice Mayor.
Yeah, actually, we're making really a huge effort now. We just changed our comp plan couple of months ago to allow for increased density along our major corridors like 41 and Fruitville, and taking commercial properties and allowing for residential only, and then allowing for double the density if they will include some affordable housing in their projects. So, you know, it's a long-term plan, but I think, you know, we're also interested in looking at ways to form partnerships with, you know, the school board, the hospital authority, everybody who has an interest in making sure that we have workforce housing, especially for all the teachers, first responders, all the things that Marlon mentioned. And, you know, so I think it's in everybody's best interest to figure out how we can get more affordable housing, which also means density, which I know is sort of an anathema to residents when they realize that maybe a dense project is going to go near where they are. But that's the only way, really, that we can get the kind of housing that we need, that everybody says that we need to have. Thank you.
Thank you.
So again, Madam Chair, you know, the merit, if we can get a quick update on that. And again, I thank, you know, Jody. Jody's been awesome to work with, always available and always ready to give us an update. So you have a really good star on the school board.
I agree, indeed.
Well, Marlon, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I apologize. We've been having to update you at multiple convocation meetings every year. And so let's just hope we don't have to provide an update next year. So hopefully we're finished before then. But anyway, Jane, our wonderful director, Jane Dreger, our wonderful director of construction. Jane, can you just give a quick little update on the MERT?
Can you hear me okay?
There you go.
Okay. Everything is completed except the work along the 41 right-of-way. We have had everything from our end into the DOT for quite some time, and our subcontractors are standing by ready to do the work. As of this morning, DOT's attorney is working with Frontier to get the release of the easement so that we can get that work scheduled. It has really been tangled up in FDOT's legal and Frontier's legal. So we hope that we're coming down the home stretch and that we'll be able to finish that and connect that loop here very shortly.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we can get done without attorneys.
So we had that and the tennis courts. I'm very excited to see that moving forward. So if there's any update that you need to provide on that or...
No, I think we're coming to the point that we're kind of finalizing the agreement in terms of what it all looks like, and Marlon and I have been working together on that, and as well as staff and Sarasota High School staff, and so I think it's going to be a wonderful project, not only for City of Sarasota, but for the tennis players at Sarasota High, so another great collaboration.
Agreed, and I know many members of the community are excited about that. And then also the advisory board, I appreciate you bringing that back up so we can speak with staff and see how we could assist in partnership with any kind of organizations. And then I know affordable housing is an ongoing discussion. Oftentimes comes up here. I think that truly, not to continue to do the same thing over and over again, but that I know that Mr. Edwards also brought this up recently at our board as a future workshop, so to discuss kind of where we stand as a board and what those opportunities look like. I know that our staff has been talking to various cities in the county, so perhaps that would be a good place to start for an update. So it's not falling upon deaf ears. Was there anything else? Okay, very good. Thank you so much. Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Chair. Before I go through what I was going to say, you mentioned something earlier, and I think it's important to note. You know, when you look at other areas of the state in terms of how they collaborate between the school districts, the municipalities, and the county versus how it's done here, sometimes we lose sight of how special it is here because we're all working in this environment. But the collaboration really is amazing. You know, we work with Jody's team particularly on all kinds of, you saw the emergencies, you saw the situation with the safe routes to school, but even on things like today, we're at Sarasota High talking about exactly what Mr. Fletcher said, is job opportunities, working at the county, the diverse types of jobs we have, so we're there today. And then we also collaborate on the education side, whether it's with our IFAS extension team, Parks and Rec. We do a lot with our water quality and stormwater that are in partnership with you all in the cities. And I think sometimes we can lose sight of that because we're so busy here and we're worried about our own things. But compared to the rest of the state, I think we collaborate, if not the best in the state, it's certainly up there.
I agree. So, agree.
I did want to mention, and it's timely because my board adopted these formally yesterday, their strategic planning priorities for the year. Almost all of them I could very readily put into a joint discussion between them. This is about school facilities planning, land use, and how it affects schools and those types of things. Almost all of them touch on, I'm not going to read them all, but if you just think about these for in terms of your growth projections and where things are going, Fruitville expansion phase one and two and what that means, as we go forward, and that directly touches on a presentation that was made earlier. You've already mentioned affordable housing. Our board is looking at what's next from a policy perspective, and of course we've been meeting with your team to talk about some of those options as well. The health of the Bay, and what does that mean from a Midnight Pass perspective, even if you think about the educational opportunities with Sarasota High with the Marine Science Program and some of those options, but just for our economy overall. We're in a deep discussion and hope to have it completely wrapped up by June of this year on contracted social services, and that certainly impacts some of the things that happen in the school district's facilities. Increase public access to our preserves and protected lands. We already do things like field trips to some of those things, but one of the things my staff is looking at is how do we even accentuate more some of those science opportunities and how we could involve the school district on that. We're looking at South County, and we're building a regional park, and our board is committed and designated the spot off 17th Street right up adjacent against the Bobby Jones, but the county commission has said this year, okay, we want to start looking at what that South County regional park planning looks like and where that may fall. And obviously that dovetails very closely with the school district and facility planning. You talked about the schools that are going to be off of South River Road, and that's another one of the strategic policy agenda items for our board this year is how do we now, we've got construction going on the north section of River Road, how do we move state, federal, and local dollars to get that south portion done as well as the developer dollars. And this is a big one I know all of us as administrators are focused on, but it actually came through my board as a priority brought to by a former Swift Mud board member who's on our county commission, the Swift Mud project funding and what that's going to look like as they cut back on how much on any of our projects when we're looking at water quality projects that they participate in those fundings. All those touches on school facilities and planning, as well as the relationships between us as local government. So I could probably have worked the other four items into it if I worked at it, but those all directly touched on things we talked about today. We're very eager to continue our relationship, particularly with the school district. You heard what Mr. Collins said earlier, but I do just want to end by saying, it wouldn't happen. I think it's the best relationship that we've had in the 12 years I've been in the community. That's just my personal opinion. Anytime I can pick up the phone, get the administrators, any of the organizations, very, very quickly. But it also starts with having elected boards that are interested in collaboration. Makes our job a lot easier as administrators to push those things when you all as elected boards are moving in that direction. So thank you. That's it, Chair.
Thank you for highlighting that. And I concur. I mean, when you look at and when you hear the staff aspect of it, because the boards don't meet outside of this, but I had a unique opportunity to see both the county and the district work very closely together. So I agree. I think we're very fortunate, and I think our citizens all benefit from that. Seeing no additional things, then we have Mr. Lovely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you for hosting this. We consider this to be a really important meeting annually, evidenced by our participation, our newly elected Mayor Nick Picciotto and Vice Mayor Jim Bolt and Councilwoman Mitzi Fiedler, also our staff, Assistant City Manager James Clinch, Kelly Fernandez, our City Attorney, and Kelly Michaels, our City Clerk. We all consider this to be a really great opportunity to talk about sharing resources. So we're a small city, and we don't often get to pony up equal contributions that some of the other communities do. Maybe our biggest one in the last decade has been our 50-50 share in the development of the Venice Performing Arts Center. And thanks to collaboration with the school and most recently with Jody, we have still have a seat at the table when it comes to planning. Our $7.5 million contribution was a big piece of our budget. We had to plan for that and amortize that expense. So we don't often get to do that. But we do have a recent history of very significant capital project development, and a lot of those involve our business partners. We're looking forward, by the way, to the Regional Fire Training Academy that's being forwarded by the school district and the county, and we look forward to being a partner in that, not just a participant. We think this is really a great way to share resources and expand our capability to deliver services. So we don't often get to contribute a lot of capital resource, but every year before this meeting, I solicit our directors to contribute ideas about how we can further our relationship with our business partners. And they are forwarding this year pretty much the same ideas that they have offered the last couple of years, and that is internships. We are eager to keep people in Sarasota County, to constrain the brain drain. But part of that solution, I think, is maintaining the continuity of education and exposure. Our Information Technologies Department, our Utilities Department, which has a vast array of professions and technology experts, are willing and eager to take high school and technical college students in on a short and long-term basis to establish relationships, to share with them our skill level and professional experiences, and hopefully keep them here. So I'm just going to keep this short, but I did want to just emphasize that our directors will follow up with their counterparts among your departments, but we really are eager to do that. It's mutually beneficial, but it's our contribution to the greater benefit in education and retaining the professional development skills in our county. I think maybe our mayor has a couple of comments he'd like to just add. Thank you, Chair.
All I'll say is that, you know, I do appreciate, you know, as Mr. Lewis said, our opportunity to collaborate. We do really good as a community, and this really helps us as electeds share this information with our constituents, specifically like in Venice with the decompression of the high school. So I just really appreciate everybody, you know, coming today and, of course, the school board for hosting this for us.
Thank you very much. Any additional comments? And then I will, so we are wrapping up, and unless there are any additional not on the agenda comments that anyone wants to make, I will, seeing none, again, I think everyone's done a great job, very concise on schedule. So I want to make a special thanks to STC Chef Brian Connect and the Culinary Arts students for prepping and, the breakfast for today, STC for the use of the conference center and refreshments, our school district staff for coordinating today's event, and just mark your calendar. Next year, convocation will be January 19th back here at STC main campus. And if there are no additional comments, we are adjourned. Have a great weekend. 25 minute format. There we go. All right.